I got that really weird stomach feeling in my stomach when we arrived at the put-in point, and I discovered that I'd left my two water bottles and food sitting on the kitchen counter back home. How was I going to make it through a three-hour kayak trip without either of them? Well, luckily, my loving and generous spouse said that she would share her meager supplies with me, but I was still really angry that I'd been so stupid. After all, I'd spent so much time coming up with this really healthy big sandwich and all these snacks and everything, and it was hot that day, so of course I was going to have to throw it away when I got home. So it was all wasted. Well, I helped her get the kayaks down from the roof of the car, and then we stood around for about an hour, waiting for other people to arrive that were coming late. My irritation with having been forced to get up early to wait was interrupted by our friendly and helpful guides talking about their previous kayaking adventures. It was one of those times where I felt a little bit out of my element. Sure, I'd kayaked numerous times, and I'd talked about one of my first times in the kid's story earlier, but these were on vacations, renting a kayak and slowly drifting down a lazy river across a calm lake. But these guys were talking about rapids and sea kayaking. They were clearly the experts here, and I was beginning to feel a little bit intimidated. Well, after about an hour of waiting, we lined up to get helped into the water. Now, the shoreline was a little steep and a little awkward, so the guides were helping everyone get into their kayaks and then pushing them off. So when it was my turn, I slowly lowered myself into the kayak I'd brought, which you're looking at right in front of me. It belongs to the daughter of a neighbor, and at that time she was probably early high school, and it's obviously a little too small for me. Nevertheless, I stuffed my long legs and my bigger-than-average body into this kayak and let them push me off. Immediately, I lost my balance and went under. In all my years of kayaking, I had never tipped one. In fact, I was kind of cocky about that. I think Margaret at the time took lessons at the Y on how to tip it and roll it and get out of it. I'm like, I don't need that. So I came up as red as the kayak, and the guides asked me if I was okay and kind of implied that maybe they just pushed me off a little bit too hard. I climbed back in and gently kind of made my way over to the other dozen kayakers that were waiting to set out. Now, one woman kind of looked at me and then looked at the kayak and then looked at me and looked at the kayak and looked at me and then really stared at the kayak because she was reading the bumper stickers that were plastered all over it. And I have to show you these. So I had to admit to her that it wasn't mine, and I made some excuse up about grabbing the wrong kayak in his dark garage in my friend's house, which is partially true, but I didn't want to confess the real truth, and I didn't really have any idea what size of a kayak I was supposed to have and which one was which and how I was going to fit into it, which is totally me. So eventually we started out. And I was really, really wobbly. Because of my weight, the kayak was barely above the waterline. And I felt like I was going to tip over just by paddling. I think I looked like a rubber ducky in a bathtub, but I think even the rubber ducky would be a little bit more stable than I was. Well, within 5 minutes of kind of this calm stream, we came up to the one and only rapids of the trip. And it was about this big. It was a small little waterfall that everyone just slipped through and continued on down the stream, including my spouse. But not me. No, I tipped over again. When I finally got upright and back in my kayak, almost everyone had gone on ahead somewhere. So now I was getting really angry, and I was trying to figure out who I could blame for all of this. The conversation in my head went something like this. This was all her idea. She wanted me to go on this kayak trip with her because we never see each other enough. She should have known my kayak was too small for me and should have said something. Why did she leave me if she wanted to kayak with me? And by the time I tipped over again, for no apparent reason, I asked one of the guides to go up and find my wife so we could trade kayaks. By this point, I was pretty mad that she was in this larger kayak and had left me behind. Of course, I didn't say anything about this to her, and she graciously came back, switched with me, and then effortlessly tootled off to catch up with the others, never catching a glimpse of the anger that was building up inside of me at the time. Now, you need to understand something about this trip. They had grossly underestimated how difficult it was going to be. It ended up being 5 hours instead of three. Apparently, they weren't aware of all the downed trees and high water levels that we had at the time, which made it sometimes very difficult to get through spots. We often had to wait and go through impediments single file, and you had to, and the current was kind of swift, so you kind of had to line yourself up and just shoot for it to get through, and sometimes the current would sweep you sideways into the log, so then you had to try again. So there was a backup. So obviously, I caught up with the folks because there was this backup. And so you had to kind of get over to the edge and hang onto a tree root or some grasses so you didn't drift into them, which then the mosquitoes ate me alive. Because, yes, I forgot my mosquito repellent with my lunch. Then sometimes as we were going down the river, I had to lean back so far in my kayak to get under a tree that the bark of the spider web-covered tree was floating within inches of my face. And it was at that time I was glad I wasn't scared of spiders. At one time, I decided to portage my kayak around an obstruction instead of squeezing through. So I got out of it and the shoreline. Successfully, I didn't tip over. But then I walked through a patch of nettles barefoot while pulling my kayak over land and then promptly overturned my kayak for the sixth time while boarding. I said, well, at least some of the oils from the nettles washed off. This was not the serene world of that little tiny kayak on my first trips that I had so dreamed we were going to do that day. Well, at this point, one of the guides took pity on me and offered to switch kayaks because he claimed his was more stable. I took him up on it. Well, my pride was so hurt that as soon as I got in that kayak, I paddled as hard as I could and sped up to put some distance between me and both guides while they were helping patiently this other woman who clearly had no experience in a kayak, and I didn't want them to think I was like her. I wanted to catch up to my spouse and all the other cool kayakers. In my mind, this had come down to a challenge to my man card, and I'd become totally self-absorbed in my own insecurity. Well, after paddling as hard as I could, and I was pouring with sweat, for about 30 minutes, I found myself all alone with absolutely no hope of catching up. The stream had narrowed. It was now this winding maze through a meadow of super tall grasses. I couldn't see anything nearby. The grasses were about 5 feet over my head, and the stream's snake-like pattern prevented me from seeing more than probably 20 feet ahead of me and 20 feet behind me. So I just sat there. I finally was winded and had to take a break. And I was kind of sitting there sulking in my kayak when I lifted my head and suddenly and noticed that the sun was shining bright in a crystal clear blue sky like it is today and yesterday that sometimes is so prevalent in Wisconsin. There was no wind, and off in the distance, on a slight rise, there was this grove of pine trees and thick woods. And from my perspective, down in those grasses with blurry sunglasses that were so dirty I could hardly see out of them at that point, it almost looked like this distant mountain range in a haze. It felt like at that point I'd been shaken awake to discover this glorious, fabulous day. I had spent 3 hours up to that point so obsessed by my own self-pity, my own ego, and my anger that I'd completely failed to notice the beautiful gift that was all around me. Here I was in one of the most spiritually inspiring landscapes I'd been in for a long time, and actually that year we had had a horribly long winter, and I had chosen to completely ignore it. With this awakening, I suddenly felt relaxed and felt the soft warmth of the sun and the air surround me. In fact, my spirit was lifted. I felt kind of transcended physically, as if I were floating above myself, and I was in that tiny little kayak going through the stream, looking down on myself. And I gained a much different perspective and was deeply humbled by it. I was reminded that the world is much bigger than me and my little problems with tipping over a kayak. Now, of course, there's many religious metaphors I could use to describe this awakening. Was it the hand of the transcendent Hebrew, Christian, or Islamic God that reached out and shook me to my senses? Was it a spirit of nature represented by Gaia, Brother Sky, or another manifestation of the power of the universe? Or was this just science, some sort of miracle in my brain that caused the right biological reactions to change my perspective suddenly? Frankly, does it really even matter? What matters is my awakening to the great wide beauty of possibility and affirmation, and then my gratitude for it. I was thankful just to be present for that moment in those conditions so that my spirit could soar and I could rediscover a much healthier spiritual grounding. Now, there are religious narratives filled with themes of awakening by their main characters. The one that first came to mind with me came from the Jewish scriptures, Moses. He was this whiny little dude in the desert, and then God starts this bush on fire and starts talking to him and says, you know, I think you can deliver those Israelites out of Egypt. You can do this. And of course, then we know the story. He went in and delivered them out of bondage in Egypt. Or Buddhism, Siddhartha. He's sitting under a tree for 49 days, searching for enlightenment, and has an awakening about suffering and its role in the human consciousness. And then that awakening led him to be the great teacher we know of as the Buddha. Roman Catholicism, I love St. Francis. I don't know if you know it, but he was a rich, spoiled brat as a kid and was pretty much spending his entire inheritance before he was going to turn 30, and suddenly had an awakening about poverty and suffering in the world. He acknowledged the suffering and then the interconnectedness of all creation, which sent his life on a very different path. He became an ascetic, usually roaming the streets in rags, begging to bring him closer to the simpler, humbler elements of society. And then he became acutely aware of nature and found transcendence and a portal to the holy or God through his environment. So all of these examples have something in common: an awakening from self-absorption to a fuller appreciation of the wider world and their place in it. Each changed the course of their life after their awakening experience, although each awakening happened in relative solitude, they occurred in relation to their surroundings and their circumstances, often while they were sitting there thinking about the big questions in life. Well, I'm not going to pretend that my awakening on this ill-fated kayaking trip ranks up there with Moses, Buddha, or St. Francis. And I don't think it changed my life forever. In fact, perhaps only for the rest of the trip down the river. But it was an important reminder to me about mindfulness whenever we're not spiritually healthy. This time, it was my ego, frustration, and anger. For me, often it's due to obsession about the past. Maybe there's a loss, some grief I have over it, deaths, relationships that have ended, this endless loop of wallowing in depression, of the reluctance to accept the impermanence of everything. I can become so self-absorbed by the loss that I'm completely oblivious to the joys of life around me, the people trying to love me, and even the simple joys in life. Or anxiety, an obsession about the future. I think this is the too common malady of modern life. I sit there with those questions: what's to become of me? Will I be happy? Will I be lonely? Will I be sick? Will I be too sick and die before I get to fill in the blank? That's why I really like that Buddhist chant that you all start the service with. I love it, focused on loving kindness, but the phrase, may I be peaceful and at ease. Being peaceful and at ease are the necessary requirements for mindfulness and awakening to the world around you. You have to be present to the moment, be mindful, and then only then do you discover the meaning of the poetry of Hafiz and what he manifested in the world itself. My spirit soared that day just as his poetry does. He says, cloak yourself in 1,000 ways, still I shall know you, my beloved. And I thought, if I look up and am mindful. He says, I shall salute you in the springing of cypresses and the sheen of lakes and laughter of fountains in the overturning of my kayak. O beloved presence, more beautiful than all the stars together, you gladden the whole earth and make every heart great. You are the breathing of the world. What a spiritual gift of beauty. Oh, and in case you're wondering, when we finally reached the end point, the guide helped me out and said, boy, that must have been tough. I've seen a lot of couples get in fights over things like that. I just shrugged my shoulders and said, meh, as if to convey this ultimate humility. But inside, my ego was growing again, and I heard a voice inside my head saying, but you don't know how good I am at rising above such things. Perhaps someday I'll really learn the lesson of humility and beauty the universe is trying to teach me. May it be so. Amen.